A lot of people will tell you within the community of adoptees, you know, our life doesn't start the day we were adopted. There's this whole other time and space and family that existed prior.
Society in general, they don't really understand the implications of adoption. They just feel, well, you were adopted, problem solved.
I knew I couldn't stay where I was or keep living with that grief. So moving through it was the only option.
I know in African culture, that's extremely important that you're able to put yourself into, they call it the flow of time. And it feels like that my lineage has been cut with my adoption.
There's such value in being in community among other adoptees, and it was validating for me. So that really helped for me to get connected, and then seems as if the world just opened up.
If I'm the secret that everybody has held for 37 years, you know, who can I talk to? And finally, it just hit me. I have a choice here. You're affected from the moment it happens. You're impacted. But I needed to know that I was going to be able to come to an understanding and a reconciliation.
It's Jennifer Diane Gostin, and welcome to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. Wouldn't it be empowering to have many of your burning questions answered here? My guest today is a major contributor to Adoptee Land and beyond. She has been featured in one of my favorite books, read early on in my connection with the adoption community, by Anne Fessler, The Girls Who Went Away. She's a licensed clinical social worker and most recently able to introduce two groups to each other, NAP, National Association of Adoptees and Parents, and Right to Know, for the Untangling Our Roots Summit, soon to take place in Denver, Colorado. Her name is Leslie Pate McKinnon. I met Leslie in person many years ago at an AAC conference, the American Adoption Congress, and we've only looked back in deep appreciation for one another. Leslie presents nationally and internationally on many topics related to adoption, donor conception, and NPE, self-discovery. She's been interviewed on Good Morning America with Robin Roberts and CNN discussing the impact of the internet on adoption. She was featured in Dan Rather's investigative report, Adoption or Abduction? And she also appeared on The Katie Couric Show with her firstborn son, Pete. She currently serves on the board of Concern United Birth Parents, CUB, and served as reunion consultant for the participants and staff of the TV series Long Lost Family. Drawn to the field by placing her two firstborn sons for adoption, when she was a teenager, her passion is educating therapists, along with the public, to the honest reality of adoption. Allow me to introduce to you someone who doesn't shy away from the harder topics in the community, such as genetic attraction, sometimes referred to as genetic sexual attraction. She knows the importance for all adoptees to be aware of what can happen in reunion with biological family members. In this episode, we cover a variety of subjects that are aimed at making all members of the constellation informed, equipped, and empowered to go into all decision-making with eyes wide open. Leslie, I feel so honored, and it is indeed a privilege for you to be a guest. And so I thank you, and I also want to know, how are you doing in Asheville, North Carolina?
Okay. Well, let me tell you that when people ask me, I moved to Asheville, it'll be 6 years ago this summer, how I like it, or do I still like it? I always say, I feel like I died and went to heaven. It's so beautiful up here. The people are friendly. There is always something funky to do. I've made flower headdresses. I've sung in an a cappella choir and was in a flash mob at the farmer's market. all things that I would have never done sitting in my little bit stodgier life back in Atlanta. But there's just always something super fun, super different, super kooky to do. And I love it. Asheville's motto is keeping it weird. So I have a flag in my yard that says I'm doing my part to keep it weird.
I never heard that before. And I like your word funky. I just recorded recently with a guest, Valerie Naiman, and she's in Asheville as well. And that's how she is. She's just really energetic and funky. Yeah, so she's fitting right in there too.
Yeah. I know who she is because she dropped some books at my house. Somebody told her we need to meet, but she's been traveling and I've been traveling. So I know of her. I'll listen to your podcast with her and get to know her a little more. And then maybe I'll go get funky with her.
Yes, she's a joy. She's just a delight. And I've met her twice, once at an AAC conference back in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was 2017. And then recently, last year, 2023, she came to Nashville and we got together. She's just a joy. And her book, Mystic Masquerade, was wonderful. It is so good.
She left that at my house. So, and now I find out I was still in Atlanta at the AAC conference. So I'm not saying we met face to face, but we were at the same conference. So, okay.
Right.
I'll remind her of that when I get to meet her.
Yes. Yes. I'm actually looking at your website right now. And I hadn't visited it before, you know, preparing to be with you now.
Uh-huh.
And when I turned to more about Leslie Pate McKinnon, and I see maintains a general practice because you are a therapist.
Right.
And I saw the picture of both of us.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't expect that. Like, I remember when we took that picture. And I just feel so good to know that that picture's on there. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. You don't remember, but I asked you years ago if it would be okay. And you just kind of said, uh-huh. And I really appreciated you let me do that. So I was trying to get while I was in the throes of doing a lot of the work I do at conferences and stuff. And that was such a great picture. I wanted to put it in there. So good.
I remember you asking me. Yes, I do. Yeah. But all these years later, it's like still there. I think that's so cool. And so that kind of takes me into us meeting. Yes. Many years ago at a conference. And I just remember thinking, boy, she's so smart and so warm and so kind. And I hope to always stay connected to Leslie. And that's what we've managed to do because as recent as last year in Louisville, Kentucky, at the Untangling Our Roots Summit, like just to be in the same room with you is, it just really makes me feel good. And so there's so many things I want to cover. And before I push record, I said, I don't know where we're going to start, but I just want to, so the listeners know, you've just been so active in the community for so many years. We're going to talk about the conferences, of course, because you will be presenting. Let's do that plug real quick. The summit this year is in Denver, Colorado, April 25th to the 28th. And you'll be presenting again, right?
Yes, I will. I'm presenting a couple of things. I'm going to be on a panel about a plant journey because since I've been up here in Asheville, you might as well try some psychedelic therapy. So that I have done that. I'm going to do a workshop, which I've done before, but it's on reunion combined with a real emphasis on genetic attraction, because I think people truly need to be educated about that. So yeah, I will be there again this year. I might just go ahead and jump in there while we're talking about that and say, that conference is a dream of mine come true. My networking pays off, Jennifer, because I introduce the two groups to one another, because all of my career, I have felt like that third party reproduction, the infertility, the donor conceived folks, they share a lot of what adoptees share. And I kept thinking, we need to combine forces. We need to be working together. There's power in numbers. And unfortunately, the infertility world started patterning everything they were doing about disclosure or not, anonymous is how they began. And so many things they said, we're patterning on adoption. And I kept going, don't do that. Adoption did it all wrong. For goodness sakes. I wanted to combine those two worlds. And then when I met the person who's the head of Right to Know, she introduced me to a whole new realm of MPEs. That's M as in Mary and N as in Nancy PEs. And these are folks who do the DNA test, usually midway through life, and find out their fathers are not their fathers. And so they have a whole upside down complete turnover. It's like being in reunion is for some of us. Anyway, this conference has really been a dream of mine, and it came to fruition in Louisville last year. And I'm really excited that we're doing another one in Denver, because we're reaching more communities this way. The more diverse our membership is, the more other communities we can reach out to.
Yes, and it was a wonderful summit. I learned so much about the groups, NPE and NPEs. There's a lot of things that we share in common.
Right.
And I do believe there's power in numbers, and that togetherness can and does heal. So yeah. I'm glad you came up with that idea, and it all happened.
That's all I contributed, let me assure you, with the idea. And these wonderful, hardworking folks brought it out and made it happen. And I'm going to throw this in here and say to you, you may decide to cut it later, but here's this fabulous example I saw recently of another community. I've had some interaction with them, but that maybe we sort of ought to be working with. There's a program that just came out on Netflix last week, and it's called The Program. And it's about residential treatment centers for teens and some of the horrors that happen and how much money it costs. They made a point in there of talking about how a high portion of their census are adoptees. I've been saying that for years. I've been training at residential facilities because so many adoptees are there. Right now, the percentage is anywhere in any given residential treatment center, the percentage of their consensus that will be adoptees is anywhere from 30 to 80% at any time. You know, I kind of went, wait a minute. There is still capitalism and all that powerful stuff making money off of adoptees when they're in their teens. You know, their parents are paying hundreds of thousands. And I do not want to act as if these teens aren't in some deep emotional trouble. They are. But they are because of adoption.
Mm.
Because the developmental task of adolescence is to figure out your identity. So if you get into your teen years, you do that by looking at all the pieces of your identity, your parents, your grandparents. You decide who you rebel against, who you're going to be more like. But adoptees can't do that usually because they don't have the full picture.
Yes.
And so it makes a huge dilemma. And so that's why they're hospitalized at greater rates. But they don't have to be. You know, there's a cause and effect here. It just dawned on me, that's another community. Like I said, I've had some meetings with them on the side. We've been talking about trying to find ways to bring this to people's attention, that there's a big picture here. And the more we start looking at it and the more we talk to other communities, the more we're seeing the relationship.
Yes, so. I appreciate you sharing all of that. And I won't cut it. well, namely, because I watched all three parts of the program on Netflix.
Oh, you did?
I did. And it's interesting that we would even be having a conversation about this because a therapist / friend / the daughter I didn't give birth to was telling me about this program. And so I started watching it, and I actually could not stop watching it. It was very hard to watch.
I heard.
But it was so informative, and I'm so glad it was done. And I do recommend people check it out. So I'm glad you mentioned all of that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, good. Good.
I want to get back to the summit. And and the first one that I know of that NAP put together with Right to Know, they did a brilliant job working with your idea, right? So everything everything we see first starts with an idea, a thought. Right. And yes, just shout out to them and for doing it again. Now, I was not able to attend your presentation in Louisville, but I understand it was so well received, and that I think can take us right into a subject that's not often discussed in our community.
Right.
Yeah. Genetic
attraction. Yes. And please note, Jennifer, that I've taken out that middle word that starts with sex, because everybody, everybody has such a reaction to that. For years, I've been trying to shine a light on this because I've seen it in a portion of my clients. I talk to other therapists who see it in a portion of their clients. It's very real, this genetic attraction. I would put in proposals at different conferences that I wanted to come and speak about it. The committees would always, oh, could you not use that word? Don't talk about GSA. Just talk about reunion. I'm like, this is crazy, folks, us not talking about it. Well, I often laugh and make the analogy. My mother never talked to me anything about sex, and you see what happened to my life. So I don't think it's such a good idea to not inform people and make them prepared. And if genetic attraction never falls in their laps, thank heavens, but at least they would know if it did. The best guess I've got, and that, and like I said, that's why I took sexual. I'm just now calling it genetic attraction, because we all have it. That's what mirroring is. When you meet somebody and suddenly you see yourself, or you see mannerisms or senses of humor, that's genetic attraction to the people you're related to. And yes, there's a certain percentage that experience a romantic feeling for that other person. But we need to help prepare them. We don't need to let them walk into it blind and then think. And this is the other reason I think that it gets kind of poo-pooed, is that, of course, the person that it happens with feels terribly responsible. They feel like something's wrong with them. They begin slamming themselves. They don't want to talk about it. I've had clients I saw for over a year that we were talking all about their reunion, but they didn't mention that piece. Mm. I'm sure they were terrified of what I might think of them. And that must be before they know that I'm the genetic attraction lady. I'm trying to educate people. When I opened up, and still do, adoptions, like when it was a child or coming into the teen years and I was working with their family and helping us open it up, I'd go through my little drill and I'd say, and this could happen. You could kind of get a crush on your half brother or sister or your dad, your birth dad or your birth mother. And they'd be like, ew, Leslie, that's awful. Mm. And I'd say, oh, and it probably won't happen to you. I just wanted to earmark it in case it did. We can talk about it. I can tell you some things we can do to fix it. Not mentioning it is just, to me, not the way to go. But I think people are fearful that they'll be blamed somehow and that they're defective somehow. I've also had members of organizations, adoption organizations. Now, I'm going to be honest, this was 10 years and then plus past, who would say, we don't want to talk about that. Then everybody will be afraid to have a reunion with us. They'll see that as one more thing wrong with adoptees.
Mm.
Oh, my God. And let me assure you, there has to be an other for this to kind of happen. And this isn't something that just happens to adoptees. It happens to birth relatives. It happens to half siblings. you know, it can happen to anybody. But there has been a big kind of like, there was historically, there's been a real pressure not to bring it too much out of the shadows. And I disagree with that 110%, because this particular situation, if it befalls you, if you think reunion was upending, you have no idea. And this can upend lives, because both of the families involved love their family members when somebody's suffering like this, and they're quick to assign a lot of blame to the other person. So the next thing you know, the whole family situation has blown up and is not repairable when things like this get acted out. I want people prepared. I want them to know it could happen. I want more research, Jennifer, and I'm working on that. But I want more research done so that we can prove that this is happening. There was a guy on Phil, what's his name? Oh, no, I was going to say Phil Donahue. Look how old I am. Who's the other one? Dr. Phil,
yeah.
Excuse me, but there was a gentleman, a therapist, a researcher on his program, and I wrote him later and got no response. Dr. Phil was doing a program on incest, as he called it, but it was genetic attraction between a first birth mother and her son. And this specialist came on to say there was no such thing as genetic attraction. Of course, it was incest. His proof for that was there was not a diagnosis in the ICD-10, which is the diagnostic code we now use, and in another one, I'm trying to think of what the other one was that he used, but two diagnostic manuals, that it wasn't stated in there, so therefore it didn't exist.
Mm.
Guess what? Homosexuality didn't used to be stated in there. It got stated in there as a deviance, and then it got taken out again as not a deviance. But whether or not it's in that book is proof of nothing.
Right.
So I wrote him a letter and said, gee, here you are, a researcher, and you work for the Kinsey Foundation. You know, you're the best person. Would you consider doing some research on this? And the gentleman didn't even have the courtesy to respond to me. So that went nowhere. But that's another thing I really want to see, is somebody willing to do some research, because in the academic world, until it's been researched and you proved it, it didn't happen. It's happening.
Right.
Way too much.
Yeah, too much. It's clearly happening. And I just want to thank a guest that came on to talk about it, Lena Scahill. And she did just a beautiful job to help others understand what it is, as she's come to understand from her experience. And anyone listening, I do encourage you to listen to Lena. That's like episode 138 from season 9.
And she's going to be presenting with me, by the way, at the Untangling Your Roots. So for those listeners who want to hear her in person.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fantastic. I really like Lena. We've had many, many conversations. I'm a part of her study. And yeah, I'm just really happy to know her.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah, that's really good news that she will be presenting with you. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
As we continue on, because there's so much. I mean, you're a board member with CUB, and you are featured in Ann Fessler's book, The Girls Who Went Away, which I'm going to kind of, towards the end of our time together, I want to read something from there.
Okay.
And while I'm thinking about it, her movie, Ann's movie, A Girl Like Her, will be screened on May 8th. I just want the listeners to know, because I had an opportunity to watch that wonderful film that you're featured in as well. But it'll be screened on May 8th with Adoption Network Cleveland. So you can just go to their website and sign on or sign up for that. And I highly recommend everybody see that.
Yeah.
And you were asked as a licensed clinical social worker to be a part of Long Lost Family that aired on TLC. I believe they concluded with season 6, which Dr. Patrice Martin was featured on. She's been a guest on here too. And I highly, everybody, Yeah, go check that out. But you were on the podcast, Angela Tucker's podcast.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it was titled How Long Lost Family Went High. And that was a great recording I got to listen to recently. They were in Chicago or nearby, maybe Evanston. I'm not sure. Were you were present for that event? Were you in the room?
No. They interviewed me down here. I was not present at the event.
Okay.
But I'll back up to tell you, I don't know if they invited me or I elbowed my way in, but I tried. What happened with Long Lost Family was they were contacting big people, leaders of support groups around the country. Jennifer, they were looking for participants and they wanted people that had been searching but hadn't had any luck. And would they agree to be on the program? And then the program would search and find for them. The agreement would be that they'd be recorded. So they asked me if I had, and I went to my group, and I did come back with a couple of names of people that said that they were willing. But before I got off the phone, I said, what are you going to do with these folks that you reunite after they're reunited? And they said, what do you mean? And I said, that meeting that you're going to see between them is an incredible highlight of their lives. But an hour later and a day later and a week later, their lives are going to turn upside down, topsy-turvy, because reunion is, I say all the time, I gave birth to four children and one of them I delivered myself, and there has been nothing that was as impactful in my life as reunion. Because it picks you up, it turns you around, it turns you upside down. And then I quickly, people look at me and I say, well, it wasn't all good, but it is for the good. It is for my healing. It is for my son's healing. But you can't just leave people out there in the breeze. And they were like, okay, very interesting. And I thought, oh, well, I blew it. And about a year and a half later, they called me back and said, we're ready to start production. And could you tell us what you could help us with those people?
Oh, wow.
I know. And so then I asked them for more background about their show. You probably heard me on the other podcast. Angela and I both talk about adoption porn and we don't like it. And that's those, you know, Dr. Phil shows and everything else. And Angela's had some experience being interviewed by some of those people that were counting numbers rather than truly the topic of the show. I asked if I could find out about them and their program, and they'd been running in England for quite a while, and they sent me as many copies of programs as I wanted to see. They were really caring, deep, neat people. Of course, they're running a program. The worst part was I couldn't speak to the participants ahead of the reunion. But I was there the day it landed, and I would give them all kinds of resources and ask them how they were doing. And I just plotted out a whole plan where I talked to them two or three times after their reunion on TV, and I loaded them down with groups they could go to, podcasts they could listen to, you know, webinars, books, articles, everything I could, and adoption competent therapists so that they were not left in the lurch trying to maneuver their reunion without support, because I think that's very important. They were wonderful people, and we had a wonderful relationship together. The staff had meetings with me to kind of, how should we bring this up with somebody? They'd find out some very difficult news. There was one situation where it was a switched at birth, you know, and the person had been thinking they were adopted. They would come to me and they would get help for how to take it up with the people they were working with. I just thought they were phenomenal. And I was worried. I was nervous. I won't make any bones about it, because there have been so many adoption porn shows. Troy Dunn, he was one who ran one. Sorry, Troy, but it was really tacky and all about the inflammatory stuff. And I just felt like Long Lost Family treated us like the people we we are, and we need to be respected, and for all we've been through. And they were very good about that and very supportive.
I'm glad that they had the foresight to call you and say, yeah, I think we need you aboard, on board. Yeah. So yeah, that was important. And one of the things you said that was so powerful in that How Long Lost Family Went High recording was, remember, this is what you said. Remember that you are not speaking for yourself alone. You're speaking for our community. Do us justice. We don't get the mic very often. Do us justice. Powerful, right? And it made me think, like any of us, when we do have the mic, we have a responsibility. And you do that so well. You've been on Katie Couric's show. You've been on Robin Roberts of Good Morning America and Dan Rather. And you model for all of us how to show up when we do get the mic.
I thank you. I thank you. I often say my mother was alive when I did the Robin Roberts one. And I kept telling my sister, oh, God, I hope she slept in this morning. Oh, I hope she slept in. I love Robin. But after those other interviews, she had passed away. And I say she's twirling in her grave because she worked so hard to help me keep that big secret for so long, insisted upon it. But I will say that my stepdad spoke up one day and said, your mother is really proud of you. Don't you ever worry. Mm. And I said, thank you. Thank you. Because it is true. I'm just like the next guy. Somebody can, like the last few weeks after Gretchen Sisson's book came out, I've been contacted by some reporters from some of the most prestigious newspapers in the world. And it's really easy for it to go to your head at a moment. But you got to back up and say, this ain't about me. Mm. This is because Gretchen's book came out there. This is getting the facts to the public. So don't be too flippant, Leslie, and say something too sarcastic or too out there or angry, whatever it is. I don't want to turn off the audience. I want to invite you to learn more about what we've been through. And I can sling mud just like the next guy. But if I start doing that in the midst, then I'm losing people. And this is all about gaining an audience. And I think the other part of that, Jennifer, is I'm 76. I've done a few psychedelic journeys here lately. And I have been told I'm becoming an elder.
Who told you that?
Just becoming, mind you. I wasn't one last week. but I think, again, there's that responsibility. I have a responsibility to speak for our community. And even the youngers do, too. Don't forget that if we get this chance, make the most of it. You know, invite the audience. I'll talk about that a little more, I'm sure, on the other side about all the infighting and the stuff that happens in our community. And this is just one of those places where I say, wash your little pinafore and polish your shoes and go out there looking good and don't bring all your negative laundry with you. And I don't mean don't say anything negative about adoption. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just mean whatever you say, make it in a way that it's palatable enough that most people can at least hear you. Try not to burn off the audience.
Yes. And you do that so well for all of us. You present so well. I feel like you utilize that little bit of time because it's such a short period of time, right? Like when you were on Katie's show, you're sharing the stage with the real Philomena.
Philomena. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that movie, that film was really good. And her story, I was glad to know it. And so you're sharing the stage and you only have a little bit of time to say whatever. And you seem to, and I know it's probably not effortless, but to get so much in. And I'm thinking of, it was so moving, that clip I saw of you talking about, you and your son, your oldest son are on stage, and you're talking about the reunion and how, I love this part, how he was the show and tell for your twins at school. And I don't know if people really caught it. I'm sure they did. I know for me, I was like, yes, that was a moment that Leslie used to say, don't let this be a secret. Don't not tell your kids or your family what's going on, because you don't want them to become adults and then wonder when you tell them something.
Right.
That they wonder, what else have you not told me, right? And
exactly.
Right? And the secrets, which I'm going to read something that you wrote about secrets in The Girls Who Went Away later. But the secrets is what's so destructive.
That's right. That's right. And here's another thing. And I came to this after the fact. The other thing about, and I'll just say a bit more so it's clear, when we found my oldest son, my children were in the third grade. I have twins that I was raising, and the entire school knew we were searching because I had told them in kindergarten that they had two older brothers and we were going to find them. And I wanted to start to give them preparation before I started a search. And so, as I always say, don't tell your children that age anything that you don't want the world to know, because they promptly went and told their kindergarten teachers, who I guess got in the in the workroom, and pretty soon the whole school said, we hear you're looking for your older sons. And but guess what, sideways? I educated in elementary school.
Right.
Accidentally. I didn't do that on purpose, but if you're not secretive and you're open, and we were at a joyous place in adoption land with a reunion, and so he came to school and he talked to the kids, and I mean, there were teachers standing in the doorway and down the hall wanting to hear what he had to say.
I bet.
So we just gave every little kid in there, every teacher in there that had an adopted sibling or, you know, was an adoptee or knew somebody who was adopted, we gave them more information than they'd ever had before.
Right.
So you do want to pick up definitely on any instances when you might be able to go public that you didn't think about. But for sure, on your first point about getting rid of secrets. And one of the things I say about when I told my children that when they were in kindergarten, I got a lot of grief from my therapeutic colleagues about, oh my God, what are you going to do to them? And now they're going to be afraid you're going to give them away and this, that, and the other. And those are all realistic thoughts in a therapeutic mind, that I didn't mind that at all. But I said, give me a little credit. I'm not just going to walk in and say, oh, by the way, you have two brothers, and walk out of the door.
Right.
This was a very well thought out, well planned, explaining to them the best I could at the ages they were how it happened. Yes. I'll never forget the day when that oldest son we're talking about, I was over visiting him, and he'd had a baby by now, and he was 7, and my son Pete went back to put him to bed, and he came out and he said, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. And I said, what? And he said, he asked me why you gave me away. And I leaned my head back and the tears started to roll. And I said, and would you please tell me what you told him? How do you tell a 7-year-old that, gee, mama, gave you away? There's no right answer. And he said, well, I just started it. You know, I just gave him little pieces, which I'll add on, which is what we do. Little kids are curious and they're going to ask questions. Why did that happen? Don't wait until he's 19 to say, oh, by the way, you asked me this when you were 7. Now let me give you the answer. No.
Mm.
Get going. In psychotherapy, it's like psychotherapy 101. I'm sure you've heard it. Everybody's heard it. Secrets keep you sick.
Yeah.
They will keep the system sick. So you got to let them out.
Yes. And you're reminding me of something Dr. Joyce McGuire-Pavo said,
mm-hmm.
that you don't just say something one time and then don't talk about it again. Like you continue to have conversations and age appropriate and just leave it open for there to be this, yeah, this exchange about whatever. Like you said, if a child has a question, yeah, here's another opportunity to have a talk. And so I might as well read it right now since we're talking about secrets. Okay. So this is from Anne Fessler's book, The Girls Who Went Away, that you wrote on page 296. In all my training in social work and family therapy, the phrase is, secrets keep families sick. You never keep secrets in families because even if the child doesn't know what the secret is, they will always know there is a secret. Thank you for that. Yes.
Yeah. Ask any MPE or NPE who was totally floored when they found out their father wasn't their father. And perhaps their mother may have suspected it or not, but was also completely floored. But that MPE, NPE knew all their life something wasn't right. One and one were not adding up to two. Something wasn't fitting in this family, but they thought it was them because we always pick, it must be me. I must be the bad egg. I'm not like them. What's wrong? I was born defective. No, you were born with some different genes than the rest of the family members have.
Right.
That's all it is.
And for any listeners that may not know, what does that those acronyms stand for?
Right. MPE is misappropriated parental expectation, and NPE is not, I think it's not parental expectation, I will be honest. And I've been working with people with those labels for a decade or more now, and I can even get confused between the two. But basically it means, oops, I did that DNA test, and my father who raised me is not my father.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I want to get into reunion.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that you did share on Katie Couric's show, that meeting your oldest son, and I think that was in 2000.
Yes, it was.
It made you whole again. And I think that reunion does really create the opportunity for healing to take place for everybody. Why don't you share a part of your journey and what reunion, what it has meant for you?
Definitely. I think reunion, we all look to as the healing part of our journey, or for some of us who are coming new into the community and have felt the anguish and the pain and the disconnect, we're hoping that reunion will fix that, that then we'll feel connected and we'll find the people we were meant to or the people that get us. We put a lot of expectations on reunion, and it cannot fulfill all of them. It's the beginning of another chapter in our adoption journeys, or finding our biological relative journeys in the case of an MPE or an NPE or a donor conceived person. It's another chapter. I definitely think it heals. Oh, it heals immensely. And so I need to stop and talk about that a little bit, but bring me back if I need to. But it also brings up an awful lot of loss, because especially if you're lucky enough to kind of jive with the people you're meeting, the birth relatives, you're feeling some connection, then the next thing you can get into is feeling all the sorrow for not having had that all those years, or how could life have been different if I had not gotten separated from them. I just want to be clear that reunion, I think, is the best part about being in this adoption land, but it's not without problems. It's not without pushing up deep emotional issues that you might not have even been aware were there. You then have to re-navigate all of your relationships with the people you had before reunion, like with your adoptive family or with your birth family or however it is. So you have a lot of work to do in there. But I do think it's the much more positive side. Reunion for me, Jennifer, I could finally speak about my boys out loud and out in public. I'd begun to do it in the professional community. Like, my husband bought me a necklace when the twins were born. I have twins who are now 33. And then after I got reunited, he bought me two more charms for my big boys. And I'd wear it all the time. And, you know, people would say, well, wait a minute. Well, who's that besides the twins? And, you know, it gave me a way to talk about it. It gave me a way to become more public, and people like the good story. So the reunion story is a better story to share when I'm sharing publicly with folks. I even put blue balloons on my mailbox, and neighbors came by and said, oh my God, you can't be pregnant again at nearly 50, can you? And I go, no, this is about me meeting my sons. But again, just making the opening to be able to talk about it is so relieving, because most of us have been kind of locked in a box. We might not have had it be a secret with everybody, but there was no real forum to just relax, let your hair down, and kind of say what was going on with your life.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I don't think I've heard anybody say it quite like that. And I would have to agree that once I was in reunion, like with my maternal side in 2012,
yeah,
I could now talk about it. I've always known. I can't recall not knowing I was adopted.
Right.
And you know, certainly all of my family, like it was no secret.
Right.
And yet there wasn't a whole lot I could talk about. I couldn't really answer anybody's questions, right, growing up about right. anything. But once I got in reunion, got a lot of questions answered for myself. Now I could talk about it. I could say, you know, yeah. that's my brother. Those are my first cousins. And what the story even was. Like what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad you shared that.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives us positive entry into society.
Yeah.
I never could figure out how over lunch to say, by the way, did I tell you? And then tell them some of the trauma I'd been through around it. It was like, that wasn't what we were at lunch together for. But if you can lead with this positive, it also opens the door for you to share, well, what was that like for you growing up? And then you can say a little more. Mm-hmm. It was really hard. Thank you.
Yes.
Very hard. And
yes.
I thought about it all the time. Thank you. But nobody asked, and I didn't really think anybody wanted to hear. And yeah. So.
Yeah, that's a powerful piece. Yeah. I don't even know if I had made that connection, because now I feel at ease. I feel, yeah a sense of ease with sharing what I've been through, like, and
right.
put it all together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think has been, like, the most rewarding thing about being connected to the adoption community?
Mm. Well, that whipped me right back to one of the very early, I think it was an American Adoption Congress that I presented in, and the room was full. I was with two other first birth mothers, and we shared. And of course, I always get asked to please share both stories about, because the second birth was rather dramatic. And to this day, every time I share both stories, I'm not going to lie, there's still a little difficulty, especially talking about the second pregnancy. But I shared to this huge conference room, and afterwards a woman came up and told me about her sister who had given birth twice, and she too, the second time, was unable to talk about it, and so did it on her own on their family farm. But it was like, she was crying and told me how much I'd helped her. And I wanted to cry and say, do you know how much you just helped me? This being able to tell my story and be witnessed and be seen for who I really am. And as I said to my two friends that presented on that panel, I never shared my story, Jennifer, because in my fantasy, whoever I told would run out of the room. This is my fantasy, not what was going on with him. But, ooh, let me get away from that horrible creature. My God, she had not one child, but two. Didn't she know what happened? But now I can share it and be witnessed in a way that I was never allowed to talk about it before. Right. And so people are there for me in my pain and in my joy, and I'm seen for who I am. Oh, and what I said to the two panel members was, I didn't see anybody run out of the room, did you? There were like 110 people in there. And I said, they all seemed okay. So guess what? My fears, somebody may have felt that way, but they were not well-founded. And just to be seen for who I am was, everybody needs to be witnessed. That's part of the reason I became a therapist after I got through all that in my youth was, well, good God, if I've survived that, I can survive anything. And I know how important it's been for me to get to talk to a therapist about what happened. So maybe I can be there and witness somebody else as they begin to unpack what's been going on in their lives. Because you've got to have a witness to make it real,
right?
To feel seen. And so I think that is the absolute most positive thing about our community, and that we are a big community, but we're also a close community. I have all of my best friends are in this community now.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's been very rewarding for me, and helping somebody else has been the side benefit. I'm getting a reward out of this too. Right. That's really something.
That's a beautiful answer.
So,
anything challenging?
Hey, beg your pardon.
How much time do we have, right?
And I'll keep it short. I was just online yesterday trying to help with a situation. The challenge is, this community has been through so much trauma and been expected to deal with it in silence and isolation, that when they get together, sometimes they can let that trauma out on one another. There's a lot of infighting, but you know what? There's a lot of infighting in most groups.
Right.
So I'd be ridiculous to think we were the only one. I was the president of my church's gospel choir for a while, and I said, those were some of the nastiest people I ever worked with. And I loved them dearly. And I sing with them every Sunday. But talk about, could get witchy and bitchy in a second. You know, they could. And we were a church group. So come on. So I shouldn't fault our adoption community in any way. But I do hate it when I see certain traumatized people going after other people, because those people are traumatized too. And I wish we could dial that back a little bit. People need to heal, and people are going to have to be angry to heal and work through their trauma. I just wish the community would remember what I always say is, pull up your big girl pants and remember that you're talking to another human being on the journey, and they've hit some bumps too, and maybe just don't go for the jugular. Just try to say it, dial it back a little bit. That's my complaint about our community. And yeah, at the same time, like I said, I have lots of understanding for it. But I think as a group, I do think, Jennifer, we could speak up a little better when we see somebody getting hurt or maligned, and speak up in a group and say, you know, you had a point, but it came out and landed on that other person, and that may have been less than fair and not so helpful to them. In other words, I think we want to encourage people to get it out, but we want to encourage people not to take too many bodies, you know, while they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that, dial things back with the infighting. I totally agree. And speaking up, yeah, I recently was reminded by Sarah Easterly, an adoptee, of how she saw Lori was being attacked. She spoke up, and Lori's an adoptive parent. And I thought, yeah, we do need to speak up when we see that something can be dialed back. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly the situation I was in yesterday. I did a podcast and I made a comment about, it's easy for us to paint a picture of the enemy. And I certainly did it too, as I was coming in my early days. And unfortunately, and I'll go ahead and say it here again, a lot of us picked the adoptive parents as the enemy. They got the child. They've got the money. They've got the this. They also got something very complicated that they didn't think they signed up for. And we can all easily say, well, you should have known. And there are no guarantees when you have a child. That's true. But when you have a child that's hardwired in a disconnect, you're going to have some troubles raising that child. And they weren't any more prepared than the rest of us. And I spoke up in a community trying to say, yes, I think adoptive parents need to get educated, but we're never going to educate them if we go after them. And we want them on our team. I want a world of woke adoptive parents. That's what I want, Jennifer. Woke as can be. And I have a handful of them I know very well. And that's what I want. So they can help wake up the others to what's been going on. But then I got maligned. Somebody else in the group got maligned because we were standing up. In other words, oh, you're all for adoptive parents. I don't think I said that. I didn't say I was all against them either. I'm just saying they didn't have the information. They were sold a dream that was not realistic. That's right. What I'm trying to say.
And I often think if you're helping an adoptive parent, aren't you helping that adoptee?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank
like,
you.
Yeah, that's what comes to Thank my you. Mind. If my
and
adoptive parents had the resources or got
yes.
the information, it would have helped me.
Yes. Well, and let me say to you, I got, when I was first in the community, now I'm talking 15, 20 maybe years ago, I got a number of adoptees that didn't care for me because I was making money off their backs. And I said, excuse me, I was trained as a therapist, but would you rather I just leave those people out there? Would you rather I leave those kids who are in big trouble like you may have felt when you were 12 or 14, or and give them nothing? Or would you prefer maybe I go in and try to educate their parents as to what's going on? You can be mad at me because this is how I earn my living, but I am trying to educate and help. And I had, because of being a therapist and working with adoptive families, I hate to tell you this, they're not all bad. There's a news flash. Okay. And I had plenty of them. Plenty. I can say I maybe up as many as 10 in my practice that told me if they had known that this was what was all underneath this. And yes, they were smart people. And yes, maybe they should have done their homework better. But does any one of us not know what we're getting into? I didn't when I relinquished. So they assured me they would never participate in adoption. They would be educating their friends and family members. And again, not to deny adoption to a kid who needed a home, but to deny that this was some problem-solving way for them to make a family. They got it. And I want as many of adoptive parents to get it as possible because, here's the truth, they do have the money. They do drive the desire for the children. And so I want more of them to get educated so they'll rethink this.
I do too. I so agree.
The other day, somebody had written me, probably one of those reporters, but he was saying something about adoption. And I said, look at it this way. We've all heard this in adoption land a number of times, but if I was a thalidomide baby and born without arms, that would be a horrible tragedy. But does that mean I can take yours? You selling your arms, Jennifer?
No, not today. No.
No. And it used to be these awful, infertility is awful, but maybe we need to back up and look and say, but adoption, I've been saying this for 20 years, adoption is not the cure for infertility.
Right.
Not in the least.
Thank you for sharing all of that. Yes.
So, sorry, I got long-winded.
No, you're fine. And this has been every bit of what I had envisioned our time to be. It's just so great. Thank you. And in closing, is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to share?
Let me think. Well, you asked me before we met a little bit about some of the things I was proud of doing during my run, because my run is just about over. I'm not going anywhere, but I'm 76 and I am really enjoying grandmotherhood, and I'm going to be enjoying more of it, and I'm always going to be a part of this community, and I'll always be running my mouth too much. But I am starting to kind of pull together and look back at my work over the years, and I do have a couple of things I'm really proud of, and I was never proud of Leslie, so I'm going to share them because I am proud of Leslie now. And I just want to add that being on the Cub board and being so involved with Cub is Concerned United Birth Parents, and they saved my life when I met them. I've helped initiate an online support for first mothers, birth mothers who may have never spoken to another first mother, birth mother. We get pretty deep in the weeds, my segment too. And so that has been wonderful to reach women who've never been able to talk about their loss, and men, by the way, we have men coming, before. And so I feel real happy for that. It's been very positively responded to. And I see more and more organization like Adoption Network Cleveland and Adoption Knowledge Affiliates, NAP, for first and birth parents and for everybody. Don't get me wrong. My segment was just the silent group. After our babies were taken or relinquished or signed away, whatever happened to you, then that was it. You were left on your own. So that feels good. My first thing I remember when I was coming out of the fog was, oh my God, I didn't know any of this happened to everybody. I didn't know what my sons went through. And I didn't know that what I was going through was absolutely normal. I thought I was so effed up, I couldn't even forget it and get on with my life. I was really a bad seed. I wanted to train all the therapists I could find, and I trained with Joyce Pavo, by the way, so that everybody, when they first met me, said, oh my God, you got to go meet Joyce. And I did, and she was wonderful and took me under her wing, and I taught at her summer workshop, for lack of a better word, on Cape Cod. So I got involved, in other words, in teaching adoption competency to therapists early on with Joyce, and continued to do that throughout my career, because therapists need to get more trained. It's nice if you can have a therapist who's an adoptee. Don't get me wrong. It's nice if you can have a therapist who's a birth first mother, but you don't always get that. And there have to be more people in the field, and we need to be trained across the field, because adoptees will show up in many different kinds of folks' office. So adoption competency has become a real skill, and it is recognized. When I said those words 20 years ago, other therapists looked at me like, what are you talking about? So that I'm proud of. The other thing, and I'm going to be working on this soon, is I started a group when I was doing my practice for little girls called the Girl Connection for little adoptees. And it was stellar. I'm not going to go into the details of it here because this isn't the place, but I got little ones talking at ages of 7 and 8, and we worked out exercises that they did in a way they would take it home and share it with their family, because my whole goal was to get those little girls talking to their parents at 7, 8, 9, so that it kept coming up as a topic. I'm going to do some writing and hope to make a manual of that, because the younger you reach them, the less deep and hard and fast is the fog that they're getting baked into. If you can get them to open their mouths while they're young, they don't have as many of the issues as those of us who were silent do. And the other,
There's more. There's so much more. Like, I'm loving all of that. Little adoptees.
The one other thing that I was really proud of was when I was on the Donaldson Adoption Institute, and I got a lot of flack from that, too, from people who said, oh, don't they promote adoption? Aren't they for? And I said, well, they're not supposed to be for or again. They're a research group, which is what I'm always about. Only I made note to them that they only had ever had one first mother on their board, and they needed more because we were a bigger part of this equation. And so when I got on the board, I was able to work with Lynn Franklin, who was the mother that had been there for a long time. And we got a research study done on birth mothers at Baylor University to look at their experiences and to see if they were really helped by them and if they went on and forgot about their child and lived this glorious life. Basically, the research study said, whoa, these women are in pain all these years later. And the other thing it came out with is the people who are working with them, the adoption facilitators and the counselors, don't seem to understand what they need. And they're not giving them a full set of options. They're offering them adoption or saying, oh, you can go over to that office and get WIC milk for yourself if you think you're going to raise the child. But anyway, the research came out with just what the mothers had been trying to say for years is, no, we did not forget. But again, you have to have valid research to make it a truth in the academic world. We knew it was true already, but getting that research done, it's the first and only big study I know ever done on mothers. So I was very proud of that. And I say that's it. And that's plenty. And I feel like, okay, Leslie, good job.
Good job. Oh, I love all of that. I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, research is so important. I think it's critical. And yeah, it is. And I love hearing about little adoptees, 7, 8, 9 year olds. Yeah, feeling comfortable enough to talk about their feelings around being an adopted person and everything else you said, adoption competent. We hear that all the time now, adoption competent therapist. That's important.
Now it's a real thing.
Real thing. And online support groups for first and birth parents. Yeah, you should be proud of that. And I love hearing that you're enjoying your grandchildren.
Yes, I am.
And I look forward, because you and I talked about this a week or so ago, that you are going to have a website. I look forward to this website that you have one already, a very wonderful website. Yes. But we talked about you actually putting all of these things on there, because these are huge accomplishments. And we, the public, want to know. I want to be able to go there and be reminded of your contributions. So I look forward to that.
Thank you. And that's just me. Got to get everything done. And if you can't get in touch with me, then you can go over there and find that podcast or that whatever. And I just wanted it all to end up in one place. If people need it, great, use it. If you don't and you could care less, that's fine too. But I just want to deposit it somewhere.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation with you, Leslie. I appreciate you so much. And I'm just glad I know you and have managed to just stay in communication with you. I wish I was going to be at the Untangling Our Roots Summit this year. I'll be there in spirit for sure.
Okay. And I tell everybody, I'll tell you, and then your listeners can hear it again. There won't be another one for 2 years. There probably, that's nothing set in steel, but I know that the next one will happen in 2 years. A year comes mighty fast when you're the conference planner.
I bet. It's a lot of work. I can only imagine. A lot of work. So, and I'm glad you shared that. When I was at the summit in Louisville last year, I was sitting at a table with a woman that said the reason that she was there was because she listened to an episode on my podcast with Brian Stanton, and we talked about it. We kind of promoted it. And it was in that moment, I still get kind of emotional, that I realized that this platform that I have, it's so powerful and far-reaching that I can't even I can't really grasp just who might be listening, who will say, I think I might need to be at that summit. So
yes. That, yeah, it is powerful. And you are reaching people that need to hear the words. And, you know, in terms, I'll just go back on that one genetic attraction thing I do, because I've mentioned it on a few podcasts. And that's the only place, Jennifer, ever on a podcast. I have a client, finished with her in Paris, had one in Italy, have a couple in the UK right now, and one in South America. Those people went to the links to look it up, and then I guess look and look and look until they somehow found me on a podcast somewhere. These are people in other countries. Come on.
Wow.
So it, one tells you it's out there and it's real and it's happening, but the other is people are hungry and looking for more information. And so I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing and giving it to folks so they know, guess what? I am not alone here. And boy, they must have been entertained with you and Brian. I love Brian Stanley.
I know, right? Yes. We laughed so much on that, on that recording.
I can imagine. He's a hoot and he's fun. But you're all reaching people and we just need to keep doing it.
Absolutely.
So, thank you. I am honored. I told you when I met you, or when I met you again, I just felt something with you the very first time. I remember meeting you, and I'm very honored that you asked me to join you for this. So thank you, Jennifer.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
I share the honor. And yeah, it's all on your face on that picture of us together.
Yeah.
On your website. So anybody, if you just want to see it, go to her website and you'll see the two of us together.
And you're going to go down in perpetuity with me. I'm keeping you on my website, girl.
Well, that's such a compliment. Thank you.
Okay. You take care and have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Okay, sweetie.
If you are the least bit on the fence about attending the second Untangling Our Roots Summit going on this year, April 25th through the 28th, I encourage you to make an investment in yourself to be there. Whether it's your first time attending a gathering of this kind or were there last year when I was there, each presenter is excited to share their wealth of knowledge and experience with you. I appreciate Leslie shedding light or reminding us of why there are challenges in our community. It has a lot to do with the amount of trauma many of us have suffered and been unable to speak about it until now. We all need and deserve a witness to whatever has happened to us as a part of the healing process. It can and does go a long way to dial things back, even when our left brain desires to run the show. I had not put into words one of the most beneficial reasons for me to be in reunion, but Leslie gave them to me. I can now have a meaningful conversation with other people about more to my story. I am no longer unable to answer the plethora of questions I would receive from strangers and people who cared about me. Being able to share details of my beginnings that I never had before finding my original family has given new meaning to being born, relinquished, and adopted. I sense that my family and friends who've been with me through several decades feel more at ease too. If you're in the Cleveland, Ohio area, Adoption Network Cleveland will have an in-person screening of Ann Fessler's film, A Girl Like Her, on Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. Leslie is featured in that film and shares her story along with other birth moms during an era that refused to support them in keeping their baby. Go to adoptionnetwork.org for more information. Thank you, Leslie, for having this wonderful chat with me that could have easily gone much longer because of our shared passion to the entire adoption community. I believe you care, that's why you share, and you dare to do all of that in a responsible way. Like you, I want to invite as many people as possible to learn more about what adoptees have been and persevered through. You model for me what it looks like to always make the very best of every opportunity when mainstream hands us the mic to be seen and heard by them. If you're an adoptee and would like to share your adoption journey, visit JenniferDianeGolston.com. If you like Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow and or give, hopefully, a 5-star rating so others can find it too. During the course of your day, I trust you will tell at least one friend or someone who you believe might find value in it, because word of mouth is still the very best way for the show to grow. Thank you for being here.